This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome back to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. We've had a week off, so hopefully we're back and fully charged ahead of a brilliant week of football. Jack Reeve and Mark Langdon back to guide you through all of the good stuff. Mark, great episode last time out. Of course, it was Cheltenham and you were going to Cheltenham on Gold Cup Day, weren't you? How was it?
Oh, how was it? I've forgotten now. No, it was really good. I know there was some in the racing sort of kind of on racing Twitter and in racing posts. There was a bit of chat about, you know, the atmosphere. I thought it was fantastic, you know, hearing the punters singing Ellie May's sort of, name, and then the Don't Want to Go Home song, you know, Don't Take Me Home. I didn't start the chants, no, but I just felt that it wasn't kind of that rowdy kind of aggressive singing that I think can be off-putting, and it was no bad language. It was just it was just people, a lot of people had backed a lot of winners that day and were in celebratory mood. I was mainly back in sort of against the favourites, but each ways that were getting placed. So I nicked a few quid, didn't lose on the day, which is always a pleasant one. But it was nice to see so many people enjoy themselves. Sun was shining, and it was a really good day.
Absolutely. We're obviously not here to talk about Cheltenham, but I think our Racing Post colleagues, David Jennings and Bruce Millington, describe it as the kind of outcome of people being locked up for 2 years and finally they were allowed to outside and to enjoy themselves. So why not have a good sing song? Absolutely. I'm glad you had a winning day, Mark. From Cheltenham to the World Cup, I feel like we should discuss this on today's podcast. Of course, the draw is upcoming. That's on Friday. And we've had some qualification games in the last few days as well. So really starting to see sort of attention turn to the World Cup. I was listening to an interview actually with a friend of yours, Nick Goff, the other week, and he was saying because of the tournament being moved, of course, to sort of Christmas time this year, it's completely thrown up in the air his preparation. Usually the World Cup will be one of his biggest kind of betting events of any calendar year, and this time he might actually think about not doing so much because he just won't have the time to prepare for it. How do you think you're going to be going about things?
Well, I've just been sort of planning this already with, you know, some of the Racing Post writers and tipsters and, you know, how we're going to do it. We are going to almost pretend that the World Cup is taking place in the summer.
Okay.
and do a big, you know, heavy amount of prep work then, because we're of the opinion that the national teams probably won't change a huge amount from sort of that June, July time until, when it starts in November. Of course, you need to be flexible and there'll be injuries, there'll be players out of form, there'll be players in form. But, you know, generally speaking, we think we can get a good idea on, where we're heading sort of in the summer. So it is definitely going to be difficult and, unusual to not have that sort of, you know, month preparation time. And then, you know, if you are betting on, say, League One and League Two, which is going on throughout the World Cup, you know, having to keep on top of all of that as well as the World Cup, it's going to, it'll definitely stretch, I think, people's time. And you may have to have World Cup specialists and sort of EFL specialists. I haven't quite narrowed it down, to that minute detail. But I think we can get a lot of the research done in the summer.
Great. I guess then the only thing you're looking out for is sort of injuries, I suppose, isn't it? Because team selection is probably not going to change too much from what you expect in the summer.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, you will get players that arrive in hot form, you know, and maybe that changes. It's hard to think of a player. Maybe there's like a Polish forward that does well in Serie A, and suddenly you're not just talking about, a one-man team in Lewandowski. They've got somebody else that can kind of share that load. Or, I saw for the Dutch, Steven Bergwijn, was in goal-scoring form for them and in sort of those internationals. And maybe he gets a move in the summer, becomes a centre-forward somewhere and solves an issue they've got. You could get someone like Pedri, and Gavi at Barcelona and Ansu Fati, these young players that, that Spain and Barcelona have got, you know, go on and actually start the season fantastically well and kind of summer well, if you like. And all of a sudden that, that you know, props Spain up. Harry Kane, maybe, you know, he might be playing for Man City then, gets injured, you know, on Champions League duty, and, you know, he's not around for England. So there, there will be stuff that, that that changes, you know, without a doubt. But I think the general basis of what a team's ability is and sort of their likely chances can be done ahead of time. I definitely don't think that that's a load of work you can do once the season starts. I think, you know, if you're taking your betting seriously, I think that'd be too difficult.
Yeah, certainly a busy year ahead for the Racing Post Sport Desk. We asked on Twitter, actually, our listeners who they fancied going into the World Cup. We gave them the top four of the market: Brazil, France, England and Spain. And the resounding outcome was people really fancying France at 6-1 for the World Cup. You had Brazil at 11-2, England at 7, Spain at 8. France nearly with half of the vote. Loads of interaction on this week's poll. So a big thank you for that. And you can follow us at Racing Post Sport at Mark Langdon to get involved in future episodes. Mark, the listeners liking the look of France. Are you in agreement?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be ruling them off. I mean, yeah, or ruling them out. You don't rule them off, do you? You rule them out. I wouldn't be ruling them out. I mean, you know, star-studded team, Benzema, Mbappe, etc. You'd imagine Mbappe be even better, you know, even better than he's been, you know, as he gets that little bit older. And so I think that France have got a very strong team. Their attitude wasn't amazing, I didn't think, in the Euros. Not sure it's exactly why they went out, but it would concern me slightly.
I think they've learned lessons from that, though.
Well, you know, but it's just when they get together for a month, whether the kind of old things resurface. Mm. You know, and Didier Deschamps just ripped up like the whole way he was thinking about sort of playing the game. He just ripped it up during that tournament, and I don't know why he did that. You know, he started playing, you know, Rabiot as a left wing back. I mean, you know, he's never going to be a left wing back in a million years. So I think France, I would make them favourites. I know that Brazil were the bookmakers' favourites. I think that France are the best team. I'm just not sure they're as far ahead of as the field as I thought they were maybe going into the Euros. And, you know, I think when you spoke about the interaction there, Jack, we did have a lot of people coming in with different teams. And I think it's quite interesting, you know, just the sheer number. Lucas says he fancies Argentina, most solid they've looked for years, a good mix of youth and experience, and Messi's last chance at glory might spurring him on. JSEC says each way on USA, 100-1. They've got some good young players.
I like that angle, Mark. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, Pulisic would be one. Dest plays for Barcelona. Stefan is at Man City. They've got a couple of lads at Dortmund. Gio Reyna is one that, you know, I think if he stays injury free, is a big talent. Mark Sugar says Germany have great talent in Musiala and Havertz. And Flick is an excellent coach. I think that that's an interesting point, isn't it? Because the Euros were won by Roberto Mancini. And if you look back, probably the best coach at that tournament, I think. Yeah, you could argue Hansi Flick is somebody that's won a Champions League, would be much better than most of those. Simon says Denmark each way at 50-1. James says he's back Portugal at 14-1. And Steve says he's been getting weekly free bets and they've been going on Spain and Argentina. He's also having a few quid on Denmark. I mean, yeah, Denmark were the team I fancied, weren't they, for the Euros, and did me well, did me proud, reached the semi-finals, just you know, one match away. You do wonder with them outsiders whether you only get one chance at you know, that kind of glory, I would say.
It does feel, I mean, sort of reading through those responses, Mark, a lot of them teams, I find myself nodding my head out and going, yeah, I can see why you've gone for them. It does feel particularly open this year.
It does, yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, we haven't mentioned England there. I mean, if you put a midfield of Rice and Bellingham together and you look at, I don't know if it's Trent Alexander or Reece James at right back, you've got Harry Kane up front. There's a strong possibility, I would say, for England as well. Spain, I've mentioned Pedri and Gavi and players like that. The ones I quite like, and they have been mentioned, is Argentina. I mean, it wouldn't be a World Cup without me fancying Argentina, to be fair. That they are the team that I kind of come around to every single time we do a World Cup. But I think it's now 31 games they're unbeaten. They're really doing well in a competitive environment. You know, that South American qualifying is a real brute of a one. They won the Copa America, so they've got the monkey off their back of they can't win anything, and Messi's not won anything at international level. That's gone. A manager in Scaloni, you know, that when they went to a previous World Cup and had Maradona in charge, you know, I mean, it's pretty chaotic, isn't it, when you make choices like that. Just, I like their steady improvement. You know, Martinez in goal really solved the problem for them. You know, he's a really solid Premier League goalkeeper now. I think we're seeing Romero at Tottenham, just how good he is. You know, a massive difference for them at centre-back. Paredes, De Paul, Lo Celso are able to kind of get the ball to Messi. That was the big problem. They couldn't get the ball to Messi. I think Messi also maybe got one eye on the World Cup as well. Now, he wouldn't be the only one. You know, you're thinking maybe Gareth Bale and a couple of others that are coming towards the end of their career, just how much they really go for it in those first, and Bale's still got to get there, of course, but how much they sort of go for it in that first part of next season, or whether they think, I'll have a summer off, I'll just get myself going nicely without pushing it, and let's go all out for the World Cup. And I just think, we're speaking before the draw on Friday, so, you know, they might get done by the draw, but at the moment, I think I'd certainly rather be on Argentina at double the price of Brazil, let's put it that way.
Argentina, the early steer for Mark Langdon. There's going to be so much more World Cup chat on this podcast and, of course, in the newspaper as well. So keep across all of our socials to stay in touch. The Premier League is back, which is exciting. It feels like it's been ages since I've watched a Premier League football match. Our match of the day, Liverpool against Watford. This one, the early kickoff on Saturday, 12:30. Liverpool 8s on, 25-1. Watford 8-1. The draw. Mark, if Liverpool win this, they will briefly go top of the table.
Yeah, so that's why I think we've gone for this game as a sort of match of the day, because of the story around it, you know, because given how far Liverpool were off, you know, they had all them problems going into AFCON, you know, Salah was away, Mane was away. How could they, never mind sort of stay just on the coattails of Man City, and they were at that stage. But, you know, it looked like at that point, probably, if anything, City would go further clear. That hasn't happened. City have fallen back. Liverpool have taken advantage of that. They're on a great run of form. And as you say, it might only be briefly because City play at 3 o'clock away to Burnley. I would fancy them to win that game. But the atmosphere at Anfield, you know, if they go top of the league, they've got that chant of Liverpool top of the league. I expect that to be ringing around Anfield at around about 2:30, really putting the pressure on City ahead of, you know, that potential decider that we've got coming up next week. Liverpool have still got a focus. There is always, you know, these kind of stories, there's always somebody there ready to spoil the party. And, you know, wouldn't it be funny if it was Roy Hodgson on his return to Anfield that did it? But I think it would be a really good atmosphere at Anfield, and, you know, Liverpool looking to lay down a marker.
Mark, does it worry you slightly from a Liverpool perspective? There was, of course, the game between Senegal and Egypt, a World Cup qualification game, which went the full 120 minutes. Of course, I'm sure everyone's seen that Mo Salah missed a penalty with about 15 lasers being pointed in his eyes. I mean, that's hardly ideal preparation, is it?
It's not. No, I mean, that's actually, you haven't seen my notes, but I'm wondering if you've somehow managed to access my computer and look into them, because one of the kind of negatives I've got against Liverpool going into this game, Mane, Salah, Diego Jota had massive World Cup doubleheaders.
Jota as well, of course.
Yeah, you've got that. And you've got that real mix of emotions, you know, Jota and Mane, you know, doing the business for Salah. You know, it's going to be a heavy burden to carry missing such an important penalty for him. Now, maybe he comes back and, you know, takes it out on Watford and just, you know, smashes in a hat trick. But I think Jurgen Klopp will have to look not only at the fitness of those players, but just how they are just from a morale point of view. They've got the Champions League game in midweek. They've also got this, of course, you know, I mentioned earlier, the game against City. So, you know, it's a busy week for Liverpool. Luis Diaz missed out on the World Cup with Colombia, played a few matches for them. So that would be the concern, I think, for Liverpool. You don't really want to be playing in that early kickoff after an international break. That's kind of seen as the graveyard shift, isn't it? But of course, they need to play on the Saturday because of the Champions League. And there's positives to it because you can put City under big pressure. But yeah, Jurgen Klopp's got a man management job on his hands, I think, with some of those players. But it's probably not a better man to manage that situation, I don't think. He's really good when it comes to G-ing up the individuals.
Quick word on Watford, who unlikely to stay in the Premier League, but still a chance, only 3 points behind Everton. I know they've played two games more than the side above them. A huge price. Is there any chance that there's an upset, Mark?
I think it's just because football is football, and you never, you do get these weird moments that happen. Like everyone was looking forward to Portugal against Italy in the World Cup playoff final, and it didn't happen, did it? And North Macedonia defended for their lives for 90 minutes and then smashed one in from long range in the sort of 91st minute or whatever it was. So there's always an opportunity. I think Watford defend quite well. You expect them to do that. They've got a threat on the counter-attack as well. Those are the type of things you need if you are to cause an upset. But there is such a big gulf. We're talking about a team likely to be relegated from the Premier League against arguably the second best team in Europe. So I expect Liverpool to win. I mean, I wouldn't be backing them at 1-8 myself, but they should get the job done.
But if you're not backing them at 1-8, what is your bet for this game?
It's actually Watford plus 2.5 goals on the Asian handicap for some of the reasons I mentioned there about Mane, Salah, Jota, Luis Diaz, important players at the sort of top end of the pitch for Liverpool that have been busy. And then, hard to sort of judge how they'll come out of that. They could be euphoric and, they're absolutely buzzing. They might actually have a bit of a come down because it's Watford. I'd be surprised if Klopp went absolutely full strength in this game. So that gives Watford an opportunity to keep it competitive. And actually, in terms of losing by sort of no more than two goals, Watford only once have done that, against the kind of the big boys so far. That was Liverpool when they absolutely hammered them, didn't they? 5-0 in the reverse fixture. But it was 1-0 away to Arsenal, 1-0 away to Spurs and West Ham, 0-0 at Manchester United. I know Liverpool are better than those teams I've just mentioned, but given the fixture list they've got coming up, I don't really see sort of Liverpool being up full tilt if the game's sort of 2-0 or 10 minutes to go.
Well, that's our pick of the bunch, but there's plenty other brilliant Premier League games this weekend. Let's get on to them now. And we'll start with Brighton against Norwich on Saturday, 3:00. Norwich all but down. What are we expecting here, Mark?
Can both teams lose? I don't know. So they've both lost six in a row in the Premier League. I mean, given that Brighton have lost six on the spin, don't see themselves at the moment, I'm struggling to think of a reason to back them at twos on other than, Norwich are obviously poor. I wouldn't touch Brighton at 1-2, so I think I'll go for the draw. What you could say about Norwich's sort of recent run is that three of those games were against Man City, Liverpool and Chelsea. They were pretty competitive at Leeds, only lost late on. Maybe they can get something against Brighton. I wouldn't be confident either way, but, there's probably better opportunities to back a 1-2 shot than to steam into Brighton, I would have thought.
I'd try to forget about the defeat to Leeds where we equalised in the 91st minute and still managed to somehow lose. Remarkable. Another side that are in banging trouble are Burnley, and it doesn't get easier. They welcome Manchester City this weekend.
Yeah, I was going to go for Man City to win 2-0. City have won 9 in a row against Burnley by an aggregate of 32-1. 8 of those obviously were 2-0. And I was sort of thinking, how do Burnley score in this game? And you're thinking a set piece, aren't you? Like a corner is probably, their route to goal. I think Pep Guardiola, if I can work that out, I think Pep Guardiola can work that out as well. So I had a look how many corners Burnley had in those 9 games against Manchester City, and it was 16. So they're not even averaging 2 corners a game against Man City. To put them, you know, under pressure and to maybe get, you know, a rebound or, you know, Ben Mee attacking something at you know, at the far post or whatever it is. So I just think it's really difficult to see Burnley scoring from open play, and City have so much of the ball and are so wary of Burnley's threat that they don't give away cheap corners either.
Chelsea Brentford up next, Mark.
Chelsea to win and under 3.5. I mean, Chelsea won 5 in a row in the league, which has sort of gone under the radar because obviously they're too far away from City and Liverpool. But I don't think they've been hugely convincing. Weren't great against Newcastle in that 1-0. They weren't great in the Champions League when they beat Lille either. You know, Burnley wasn't brilliant in the first half. Crystal Palace left it late. So I think they'll win, but they'll probably grind it out against their West London rivals. I mean, it's not a huge derby, obviously, for Chelsea, but it'll mean a lot to Brentford. Brentford away to the top six, lost 2-0 to City, 3-0 to Liverpool, 2-1 to Arsenal, 2-0 to Spurs. So on every occasion, kept it respectable and kept it under 3.5 as well.
The last time we spoke, Leeds United were in all kinds of bother, but it's been a really big few weeks for them with victories against Norwich and Wolves. They're up against Southampton this weekend, Mark. How do you see this one playing out?
Southampton draw, no bet. I mean, you're right, they have won those two games in a row, but one of them was the 90-whatever minute against Norwich, not particularly convincing. And they were absolutely useless in that first half against Wolves, weren't they? It was the red card that changed the whole game, really. Now, I know that Phillips probably be back, but can we expect him to be fully sort of flying after so long out? Not sure. Bamford's injured again. I just think that Southampton over the whole season have been consistently sort of reasonably better than Leeds. And they'll be disappointed to have gone out of the FA Cup to Man City, but no real shame in that for Saints' point of view. They haven't got much to play for, so you have got to worry about that, I think, from this part of the season onwards. But I still think I'd rather be on them than Leeds.
Excited to preview this one. It's Wolves against Aston Villa, Mark.
I sense a bit of irony there
No.
Well, I did look at no goal score at 8-1. I'm going to be a little bit safer and go under 1.5 goals at 2-1. Half of Wolves' games in the Premier League this season have finished with under 1.5 goals. So you're getting 2-1 on it. There's no Neves, there's no Jimenez for Wolves either. So that's the reason I haven't gone for Wolves. I did look at them as underdogs and think, not sure about that. But you know, Neves and Jimenez are important players for them. 4 of Villa's last 9 in the league have been under 1.5 as well. Not an easy team to read, Aston Villa. I think that they are quite up and down, but didn't offer much against Arsenal last time out. And, you know, a derby game could be quite tight and feisty. Tends to not be that many goals in Wolves games as well. I know they had that 3-2 last time out, but you know, if we take the whole season and look at it that way, I think the 2-1 for no more than one goal looks an interesting price.
Now, the evening game on Saturday sees Manchester United taking on Leicester, a man that links these two clubs, Harry Maguire. Mark, he's been spoken about a lot in the last sort of 24 hours with the events that unfolded in that England game. What did you make of the booing?
I absolutely outrageous. I don't understand. Yeah. I don't understand it. I mean, you know, what? Why is he being booed? Because he hasn't played very well for Manchester United. It doesn't make any sense.
I get it. I feel a bit.
Yeah. You get the fact. So what's the fault, Jack? That he shouldn't be in the team. He shouldn't be in the squad.
I understand your point of view. I just feel a bit tired of people telling football fans how to behave. If they're paying and want to go, he has been poor this season. And on merit, does he warrant a place in that England setup? Now, I know that he has played well in those England performances, but it was a minority at Wembley. And I know that we're now talking about it, so we're doing what I'm not a massive fan of, but I'm just like, I just don't think it's that much of a big deal. Gareth Southgate acted like someone sort of shot his cat or something. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, but I just didn't understand it, because I mean, if somebody plays bad for, you know, I mean, he plays bad for Manchester United, so if the Man United fans are getting on his back, I kind of understand it. But there's not much of a crossover between Manchester United fans and sort of the Wembley, that those who go to Wembley. You love your social media, Jack, so you'll probably disagree with me here, but yeah, there's a lot of stuff on like the Instagram reels and TikTok and stuff where Harry Maguire has now become like this absolute, like it, people are just making complete fun of him. A lot of videos of him like doing missed kicks, and it just feels like there's this real kind of, I don't know, negativity towards him that isn't really, I don't think it's acceptable for England fans to boo somebody that's actually played really quite well for England over the last few years. I mean, they're not booing Jordan Pickford, and Pickford's been, what, average at best for Everton, but he's been good for England. Why is he not getting any stick? I just don't think it does it. All it does is make people, and not just Maguire, but other people think, you know, do I need to turn up for this? Am I better off being out of it? And I felt like the fans and the players had been kind of onside and with each other over the last few years. And I don't think it was going to do the England team any favours if people start getting on the back of one of the players. You know, if you think football, this is the way it's meant to be in terms of sort of, you know, the scripts are already written. Leicester are terrible at set pieces. Harry Maguire has scored already this season, pretty recently. You know, what a way to maybe shut everybody up to
score. Could we be seeing the return of his Cup Deer celebration?
Maybe. I don't know if it's his birthday. I mean, if it's his birthday, you want to be doubling your bet. But it sort of, it kind of feels written that he shuts everyone up. Although I would never advise a bet on that. And I'm actually going for Leicester to win the game at big odds. I just think with the fact that United aren't playing great, they are vulnerable. If Evans, Fofana and Vardy are back for Leicester, I think that makes a huge difference to them in both boxes. And all of a sudden, they become a completely different animal, Leicester. And so, you know, at the prices, I can take a chance on Leicester, I think.
Okay, well, let us know what you think about the Harry Maguire situation as well at Racing Post Sport. Myself and Mark disagreeing on something for the first time this episode. Let's move on to Sunday's fixtures then, and it's West Ham against Everton to kick things off.
I thought 4-5 West Ham was fair enough here. Now, there is that kind of caveat, how many players will Moyes rest ahead of the Thursday Europa League game against Lyon? I mean, I live in a West Ham area. You can't. I was at a party on Saturday. Like, just every West Ham fan is talking about the Europa League. They're absolutely buzzing for it.
Is it unbearable for you?
Yeah, we are at that stage. I mean, they're already talking about Barcelona in the semi-finals and how they're getting there and all of this sort of stuff. You know, there's a round for both teams to play before that. And you know, I'm on Barcelona pretty big to win the Europa League. hopefully the run goes no further than that. We're on the verge of it being unbearable. But
I didn't spoil the party for you, Mark.
No. It wasn't that spoiled it. But I understand why they're excited. I mean, it could be a once-in-a-generation thing. And, of course, if you win the Europa League, you get Champions League football next season as well. So, you know, there's a lot to play for. I just was thinking about, from David Moyes' point of view, would you want to go that long between playing a game? You know, so they've had the international break. They're not playing until Thursday. I do wonder whether he might think that actually his players need a run. You know, if they were playing Tuesday, maybe not. So as long as he picks a reasonably strong team, I'm happy enough to back West Ham at 4-5. I mean, Everton's away record's an absolute joke. You know, no away win in the Premier League since the end of August. 4 straight away defeats in the league in 2022 by an aggregate of 12-2. Shots on target in the last two away league games, 18-0 in favour of their opponents. They were beaten 4-0 by Crystal Palace in the FA Cup. I thought Palace were a good bet, made them the nap, you know, before the international break. I just don't see any massive improvement from them away from home. So I'll go for West Ham.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, Matt. Mark, I don't think you're going to get an easier winner all season. It was a brilliant angle you found there.
Well, I don't know. I don't think I particularly found it, Jack. I mean,
well, I know, but the price felt big is what I mean.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, I mean, there probably is a bit of reputation just based in there with Everton. But, you know, and they've battled quite well at home, haven't they? Nicked a couple of really important like when the 1-0 against Newcastle, even against Man City, you know, they played reasonably well in terms of, you know, being together. But away from home, they've got serious issues. And until they sort of sort them out, I don't really want to be sort of trusting them. The West Ham fans also really don't like Frank Lampard. So, they'd be looking to sort of serve it up to him as well, I would imagine. So, West Ham at 4-5 will do for me.
Sunday at 4:30, Spurs against Newcastle. Where are you going to be watching this one, Mark?
You know me, Jack. If it's staying a Sunday 4:30, I stay at home. I don't venture out for the 4:30 on a Sunday.
What is the perfect Saturday 3:00? And if it's not that, you're not going.
No. I wouldn't say that. I don't even mind midweek night games. It's just the Sunday. It's that preparation. Like, you know, I want to hit the Monday morning hard. And if you're feeling groggy, you can't really do that. I don't even hate Sunday 2:00. Any time on a Saturday is good. I think if I were going, I think I'd see a Tottenham win. They've won 5 of their last 7 in the league. I think they're playing quite a bit better now than they were at the start of the season. Not a massive betting game for me, but if you're looking to have one, maybe something like a 2-0 correct score. Newcastle lost their last couple of matches really late on, 1-0. Just not sure about their attacking output. And we know that you can say that Tottenham going forward are really strong with Kulusevski, Kane and Son all playing well at the moment.
If our colleague Bruce Millington is groggy on Tuesday morning, we'll know why. It's Crystal Palace against Arsenal Monday night at 8:00. Will there be a win at Selhurst Park for Palace?
I'm not sure about a win, but I don't think there'll be one for Arsenal. I was going to go for Crystal Palace or draw double chances. Some firms going odds on Arsenal to win this game. And I think that it's a harder match than that. You know, like there's been weird accusations about Arsenal over celebrating some of their recent away wins. I just don't get that. I mean, they were difficult away games at Wolves and Aston Villa. Why would you not celebrate? Found that pretty odd how people can get angry at that. I mean, people used to say Arsenal didn't care, and now that maybe they care too much. I mean, really strange. I don't think they'll be celebrating after this game. I mean, you know, Chelsea and Liverpool won at Selhurst, but had to work really hard for them victories. I'm looking at Arsenal's run, and it's been very good. 6 wins in 7, but 5 of those were by 1 goal in the Premier League. And it doesn't take much for that, you know, narrow victory to become a draw. And Man City couldn't find a way past Palace at Selhurst. They're in the quarterfinal, semi-final now of the FA Cup. You know, the good time. There's a good vibe around Palace at the moment. And I think if Arsenal win, it will be a really excellent success. And I think they've got less than a 50% chance of doing so.
That's the Premier League best bet sorted. Let's get the EFL tipped with Dan Childs. Well, always a pleasure to welcome EFL guru Dan Childs to the show. He's been in phenomenal form on Mark Langdon's Bets Club this season. So hopefully we'll have some more winning bets from the man himself today. But we'll start with a question from Twitter. It comes in from Stuart Dan. He says, it's John Sheridan, Steve Evans and Phil Brown in the relegation scrap. Who would you want most in charge of a team down at the bottom? And who would you least want out of those three?
I think context has got to come into it here. I mean, John Sheridan was the one that would be the one I want most. But that's probably simply because it's Oldham. I mean, John Sheridan and Oldham go together, don't they? This is his sixth spell there. Now, Oldham, a lot of those spells have been short spells where he's sort of gone in there, done a pretty good job most of the time, then left. But in this kind of firefighting situation, that's probably what you need, really, just to come in and make an impact. He's been there for, you know, took over at a stage when they were in big, big trouble, 7 points from safety. Currently, I mean, they won at home to Lake Norwich on the Tuesday, 2-0 to get out of the relegation zone again. They're out of the relegation zone on goal difference. So that's an excellent recovery. Within that, they did have a 6-game losing run, but a hell of a lot of injuries there were during that period. So it does seem to have made an impact there. Oldham and John Sheridan seem to go well together. I mean, as regards the other two, I just feel that, I mean, picking the one that I would least want in charge, I would actually go with Steve Evans as the one I would least want in charge in this situation, mainly because he's generally used to leading promotion charges. I mean, you'd think earlier in his career, he got Boston promoted a couple of times, Crawley Town promoted once, Rotherham he got promoted a couple of times. Very rarely has he been involved in relegation battles. I think Rotherham, he once kept in the Championship. They finished fourth from bottom in the 2014-15 season. But you look at his more recent jobs, his career does seem to be tailing off. He probably peaked when he got the job at Leeds. Then he had the job at Mansfield that didn't go too well. Peterborough, he was sacked. And Gillingham this season was eventually sacked. And the worry I would have there as well is that sooner after he left Gillingham, they've actually improved quite a lot under Neil Harris, which maybe suggests that, you know, was he part of the problem there? Gillingham have gone from like 7 points adrift of safety to four clear at the moment. So he would be the one I would least want in charge. Phil Brown, who's just gone in at Barrow, he has struggled in his last couple of jobs. I mean, he went in at Southend towards the end of last season. 6 points adrift from safety they were. They did go down, and they had a terrible run in the National League as well, and he was sacked from them. He has done a decent job early in his career in a couple of his jobs. Got Hull City promoted once, got Southend promoted as well in his first spell there, which went a lot better. So I wouldn't be convinced by the Phil Brown or the Steve Evans appointment, but Steve Evans would be the one I'd be least convinced by.
There we go. I'd completely forgotten, Dan, that Steve Evans had been at Leeds. Feels a long while ago now. There we go, Stuart. That's your question answered. Dan, how many tips have you got for the listeners this week?
I've got three this week. Just going to start off in the Championship with the first one. Middlesbrough away to Peterborough. They're a bit of odds on Middlesbrough, around the 8 to 11 mark to win this one, but they're just outside the playoffs at the moment. Middlesbrough in seventh place, but they're well placed. They've got played less games than the four teams that are in the playoffs. Only 2 points outside the top six. Since Chris Wilder's gone in there, they have had really promotion form, really. They were kind of mid-table, a little bit lower than mid-table under Neil Warnock. So he's done a very good job there. Had the cup run as well, didn't they, where they knocked Manchester United and Spurs out and then lost to Chelsea. Did some good business in January, Middlesbrough as well. Brought in players like the loanees of Connolly and Balogun in from Brighton and Arsenal. They took a little bit of a time to settle, those two, but they've improved. We're both on target in the recent away win where they won 2-0 at Birmingham. So they're looking good, Middlesbrough. Peterborough, on the other hand, they've been struggling for a lot of the season. And they did win the last game 3-1 away to QPR, and they are playing a little bit better under Grant McCann, but they're still 7 points from safety. No home win since December, and I can't see them beating Middlesbrough.
Middlesbrough first up for Dan Charles. What's the second tip?
Yeah, second tip, we're going to go to League Two. Going to go with playoff chasing Salford away to Hartlepool. Salford around the 13-8 mark. I mean, they're actually only one place between these in the table, but it's 7 points, and that is the difference between 11th place Salford having a chance of getting in the playoffs and 12th place Hartlepool, who really have got nothing left to play for. Salford have been on a really good run, unbeaten in 10 games. So they're coming good at the right stage of the season. Got a front two there, Brandon Thomas Asante and Matt Smith, who they brought in from Millwall. So, you know, ambitious signing there from a Championship club. Those two are going well. 4 goals in 3 games for Thomas Asante, 2 in 3 for Matt Smith. I think their threat, you know, could give them the edge here away to Hartlepool. Realistically, like I said, they're out of playoff contention. They had a similar type of game on Tuesday where they were playing against promotion chasing Mansfield at home again. Drew the game 2-2, but they were kind of hanging on there. Lost a shot count 23-10. Maybe they won't be as fortunate against Salford, who I expect to dominate as well.
Two very convincing arguments there, Dan. The third and final selection for this week.
Yeah, third one. Another team chasing promotion in League Two, Swindon. Who are in ninth place, away to Rochdale, who are struggling towards the bottom end of League Two. I just think Swindon, I mean, they've had a great away record most of the season. Most amount of away wins in League Two with 10 away wins. They're well placed, 2 points outside of the playoffs with a game in hand, and the joint second highest scorers in the division. So, you know, having a good season. Got Harry McCurdy banging in the goals for them. You know, one of the reasons for them being so good in front of goal. And they're against the Rochdale team. They're probably going to stay up, Rochdale, because they've got a decent enough gap to the teams in the kind of bottom three or four. But they're having injury problems. Tavon Campbell, their main centre forward, is out for the rest of the season. So is James Ball, who's a key midfielder for them. Two big injuries there. They did beat Carlisle 2-0 on Tuesday, but they had no win in the previous seven games, and I just think they may struggle against Swindon. Unlike Rochdale, they've had a 3 week to prepare for the game. As I say, good away record. I think they'll win there at Spotland.
Brilliant. Dan, thanks as always, and best of luck for this weekend.
No problem. Cheers, Jack.
Brilliant to have a full slate of Premier League action and EFL action back for this weekend. Thanks to Dan Child, as always. Let's take a look elsewhere, or maybe staying where we've already previewed. Mark, we'll start with your prop shop.
Yeah, we're going to stick with Crystal Palace. Conor Gallagher, now sort of part of the England setup, he's on his joint biggest drought of the season, 5 games without a goal for Palace. He's 6-1 to score any time. I really like the runs he makes, the energy he provides. You know, I've already mentioned a couple of times, I think this is going to be a really difficult match for Arsenal. Even if they win, they might struggle to keep a clean sheet. And he's 6-1 anytime goal scorer. You know, he's having a decent amount of shots this season. He's obviously a very good player. And he just looks an interesting price to me.
How about a long shot this week?
Leicester. I am gonna put a little asterisk by it just to say you'd want at least two, I think, of Vardy, Fofana and Evans to be available. But if they are, that just takes Leicester, completely different team. You know, obviously Vardy up front is, you know, his absolute quality and has shown that over the years. But defensively, Evans and Fofana, I mean, how much better are they than Soyuncu and whoever else, or Martin, the other kind of characters he's tried to play at centre-half this season? It's one of the reasons why they've been so bad at set pieces. I think it's another reason would just be why they've been conceding too many goals. If they can sort out that defence, the attack gives them an opportunity, because United are not playing great. Let's give Leicester a little bit of hope at Old Trafford.
Excellent. Time for the top treble.
Yep, Lazio versus Sassuolo. Both teams to score. I mean, both teams are, you know, usually involved in high-scoring games. Real Madrid to beat Celta Vigo. I'm hoping Karim Benzema's going to be back. He has started training. Didn't play for France on international duty. But Madrid are really good on the road. Won 10 of 15 away games in La Liga. And then Milan can bring home an all-continental treble. That they've got Bologna on Monday, and fully expect them to carry on sort of their good work as they home in on a surprise title success. There's still a bit to be done, but certainly playing well enough at the moment.
Now, as we mentioned earlier, the last nap on Mark Landon's Bets Club was a 4-0 winner, so no pressure this time around.
I don't think they'll win 4-0. I'll put it that way. Let me just put that one out there. But it's Crystal Palace or draw. Double chance. Arsenal were around about 6-4 when they played Aston Villa before the international break. And I said, I thought that was maybe a little bit big. They're around evens to beat Crystal Palace. Are Crystal Palace any worse than Aston Villa? I mean, I think that they're pretty much the same team. If they played each other tomorrow at Wembley in like an FA Cup semi-final, I'd probably just back whoever were underdogs. So a big shift in price, and for that reason alone, you know, betting's all about sort of, you know, prices and value. And I just think that Arsenal maybe were value against Aston Villa, but now the market has moved too far. And, you know, I think this is a difficult game for them.
Excellent. A couple of Twitter questions to get through. We'll do them now. One of my favourite questions coming in this week, actually, from Charlie. And Charlie's asking the big questions that we all need to know. Why do stadium clocks stop at 90 minutes? Now, this is something I've always wondered, Mark. There's so many people who sit around me at Carrow who sort of get their phone stopwatches out. There is actually an elderly chap who sits just down the road who brings a physical stopwatch. So when the clock strikes 90, he's there. And if there's 5 minutes injury time, he will be shouting once that 5 minutes is up. So do you know the answer to this one?
Well, I suspect it's just like a space and sort of, you know, issue that it can't go, you know, they've only got like the two digits for a lot of them. But I mean, it doesn't make any sense. And even like the newer grounds, I obviously go to Spurs quite regularly, and they've still only got the 90, and it makes absolutely no sense. I mean, you know, it's not going to, it doesn't annoy me as much as time wasting and, you know, why, how you can sort of run the clock down you know, and take sort of 90 seconds over a goal kick or whatever it is. But as a match going fan, it is annoying. I'm really good at counting time in my head. So,
how are you?
I'm like, you know, if there's two things that I'd sort of put myself in a sort of the top class bracket, it would be counting time in my head and also cooking poached eggs. So they're the two.
Oh, really?
They're the two things I do really well.
Yeah, they're two very valuable life skills, actually. So what are we talking? Are we talking like minutes, or can you go up to? So let's say I'm trying to think of an example.
Yeah, well, I'll give you an example, Jack. In the time, say like my wife will just, you know, if my wife says like, "What's the time?" Mm. I can roughly know it without looking at anything.
How?
Yeah.
What are you going by? This height of the sun or something?
No, I just, you know, roughly. So say like you're watching a program, you know that sort of, you know, something comes on at 7:30. I can just sort of go, well, we've been watching that for about 40 minutes. So it's, you know, it's probably about 10 past eight.
Wow. And
then, yeah. So, I mean, I can just do that, you know, but I don't even really need TV to do that. I can just be driving and I just sort of know the time. And it works quite well with a poached egg, because poached egg's all about the timing. So it's probably the strengths that go well together. But I don't know the answer to Charlie's question, but I definitely agree that it's annoying for the vast majority. For you mere mortals that can't count in your head, I can imagine it's very frustrating.
Yeah, us football fans need to come together and figure out the reason. Mark, this is turning into sort of sat in a kitchen or something. What is the secret to the poached egg? I've heard you swirling the water, white wine vinegar. What is the secret?
Well, there are many secrets. One is the right size saucepan. So I've got like four saucepans. I'd go for the third biggest one of those.
Okay.
You know, fill it so it's not shallow. Essentially, you do need a fair bit of water. You then put, it doesn't need white wine vinegar, can be like malt vinegar or anything, a bit of vinegar that helps to keep the white sort of stick to the egg. You then do swirl with a fork to create that sort of whirlpool thing where you drop the egg in at a very low height. Don't drop it in from a high height. You almost want to burn your hands. You need to get it that sort of close to the water. And then it's to taste. But I mean, I would sort of do it for about sort of 2 minutes 20. You know, that's normally about perfect for my eggs royale on a Saturday morning.
God, there's a lot going on there. I certainly know where to come now on a Saturday morning.
You're always welcome, Jack.
Thank you. One final question of this week comes in from Sean. I think we've spoken about this before, but we'll do so again because the thoughts of Mark may have changed. Does Saka represent value at 3-1 for young player of the year? Foden, in my opinion, is a decent favourite, but I think Saka attracts the majority of votes and represents a better narrative after the Euros.
Jack, I've been talking about this for a while. We've had quite a few questions on this and also good anti-post bets over the last few months. And I was sort of saying Saka when he was like 10-1, 9-1, 8-1. I still think even at 3-1, he puts up it's closer than that between him and Foden. I don't really see anybody else getting involved. More often than not, this is like a breakthrough act. And this feels more like sort of Saka's kind of moment for that than Foden. I mean, Foden's an exceptional talent. I don't feel like he massively sort of stands out for Manchester City every time I see him. He's just really good, and we may be taking for granted just how good he is. Saka is like driving Arsenal forward at the moment, and the way that he has come back from that what would have been a huge disappointment to have missed a penalty in a home European Championship final, the racial abuse that followed that, the way that he carries himself on a day-by-day basis. You know, he's just a real good egg, isn't he, Saka? Even as a Spurs fan, he's somebody that's difficult to dislike. And I think he goes really close. I mean, if Foden wins, I think it'll be harsh on Saka. He might do because he's Foden. He's kind of the bigger name. But I think in the spirit that this award is sort of dished out, then Saka is the one that should get it.
Yeah, very likeable young man and a very exceptional football player. That's enough then for this week. Thanks again for listening in. If you need a recap on any of Mark's selections, and why not just flick back through this podcast, we'll be back again next week for another edition of Mark Langdon's Bets.